Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Supernatural George. I'm Mittens, and today we're going to be talking about Season 8, Episode 6, Southern Comfort, written by Adam Glass and directed by Tim Andrew. Yes, we are getting Garthed at a time when we really, really need it. Sam and Dean are stewing in their own personal emotional conflicts, and in blows this breath of fresh air. Too bad it's not a strong enough gust to actually shake up our grumpy emotional heroes. But we, the audience, can truly appreciate him, and we will, thoroughly. I will always wonder how things might have turned out differently if Sam had been the one to pick up that penny. I didn't really go into it too much as we went through the episode, but I think it would be a lot more about yelling about his freedom, that Dean never lets him have his freedom, and he just wants out of hunting and wants to be a normal life, and it's all Dean's fault, basically. Validating everything that Dean suspected of Sam later on when he is possessed by the penny. I think it would have been very validating for Dean in that sense and kind of eye-opening for Sam, but no, Sam does not get the scales peeled from his eyes in this episode. He's just going to continue to collect piss in his pissy jar. Anyway, Sam is holding an awful lot against Dean right from the start here. We pick up shortly after the end of the previous episode, where Sam learned of the existence of Benny and suddenly feels very out of the loop on Dean's entire life. Like the story he heard about Purgatory and how Dean got out, and maybe even what happened to Cass there, might not be the whole truth. Or just not even the whole story. And I'll say it up front. What right does Sam have feeling pissy about any of this? When Dean also only knows that you hit a dog and took a year off and there was a chick involved until there wasn't. Dean doesn't even know her name yet. That's all he knows. It's not like Sam has been any more open and honest with Dean than Dean has been with him. And arguably, Dean's been a lot more open with Sam than Sam has been with him. And nobody in Sam's life over that missing year was still, you know, trapped in purgatory and presumed dead. So I think that fact alone gives Dean a slight emotional advantage in the excuse department here. But that's my personal bias going into this episode that's largely about revenge for what look largely like extremely petty grievances, you know? So we'll pry lots of lids off in this one, including the grave of an unknown soldier with a revenge streak. Brother fighting brother. How apt for this one to also include Garthed, who wouldn't fight a fly unless it was actively murdering someone. Plus, we're peeling back the layers of Sam and Dean's trust issues in one another and dragging the long-dead Amy Pond back out of her grave to flog for a bit. Welcome to codependency hell. I know folks love Season 8 for a lot of reasons, but I just can't get past the hubris and the codependency to truly love it. So on we march into the then segment. We open with a nice little montage all about Garthed. He grows on you, and tends to get knocked out and miss the final showdown with the bad guy. We're then reminded that Sam quit hunting for a year to have a normal life with a surreal girl and a dog he ran over, while Dean was battling for his life in purgatory with Benny. And Sam is super pissed that Dean has a vampire bestie now. And that brings us to now in Kearney, Missouri. A dude's fixing his car when his wife comes out and is irrationally angry, kicks the jack away, and runs her husband over with the blood splat landing on a Confederate flag proclaiming, "The South will rise again," as we cut to the title card. Because at least one guy from the South has risen from his grave, mostly to exact revenge. After the title card, we cut to Sam and Dean getting lunch from Fat Mac's Rib Shack with the angry pig mascot. And I think this is the last time we ever see this place in canon. And it has previously been the scene in 6-8 where Crowley conscripted them to hunt for alphas for him in exchange for the promise of Sam's soul being returned. Long before we learned that Crowley was unable to get Sam's soul back for him anyway. It was also the place where Dean got lunch in 7-6 The Mentalists on his way to the town full of psychics when he and Sam were split up after Sam learned that Dean had killed Amy Pond. So it feels apropos here for this chat where Sam is being a sourpuss about Dean's relationship with Benny and throws the whole Amy Pond thing in his face. While Sam had fetched their food, Dean discovered the case from the cold open. Dean hadn't said a word to Sam since they left the scene of the previous episode, and Sam's all up in his business about it. Sam says he gets Dean had to do what he had to do to survive in purgatory, but he cannot understand why Benny is still alive now that Dean's out. Like what, Sam? Was Dean actually supposed to say, "Hey, thanks for helping me get out of purgatory," and then just murder the dude? Really, Sam? Sam is just so incredibly indignant about it. It's one of those things that makes me really not like Sam sometimes. He questions Dean's judgment about Benny as if Dean hadn't forged a friendship with the guy over the course of a whole ass year, where Sam literally did nothing to try and find Dean, or Kevin, and played house with an angry lady instead. And he has the gall to call Dean's sincere judgment of his friend into doubt. He brings up Amy, like nothing stopped Dean from killing her. Reminder that this was well over 2 years earlier in canon time, a year that we saw on screen, plus the year in purgatory. And it's not like this happened yesterday. And Sam is still apparently really bitter about it. Taking away the fact that Sam was actively hallucinating and hiding that fact from Dean, actively lying about it to everyone, putting his own judgment in sincere doubt when Dean chose to go kill Amy. Dean instead brings up Kate the werewolf, who they let go a few weeks ago. And Sam is incredibly condescending and dismissive, almost like he's jealous, or at least feels hurt or left out about something that's very clearly been a larger part of Dean's life than he'd let on to this point. And Sam's just unaware of it, and that unsettles him. He's mad that Dean would have hidden this from him, but really, how trustworthy has Sam proven himself to be? He's also hidden what he did for a year from Dean. He abandoned his responsibility to Kevin, let alone to Dean and Cass, and hooked up with some woman who we're about to find out was likely on the verge of ending things with Sam when he walked out on her, since her supposedly dead husband was actually still alive. More on that in a few more episodes, though. I just needed to mention it for anyone who hadn't remembered that detail. And, you know, Sam's also lied to Dean since he's been back about having considered applying to colleges again. Like, Sam's already making his exit plan without even discussing it with Dean, which is what Amelia will complain that her husband had done when he signed up for the military. Didn't even talk to her about it. And now Sam's pulling that same shit on Dean. It's kind of gross that he's so blind to his own hypocrisy here. But Sam is standing on really shaky ground here, making this Dean's problem, having little tantrums over it, while Dean is very calmly laying out facts for him. He might trust Benny, but he also acknowledges that if Benny screws up and another hunter ends him, that's just the way things go. Sam has to have the last word, though, and almost accusatorily assumes that Dean would give Benny a pass himself, though. You're not going to kill him, though. And we will revisit this bitter feeling in a few more episodes, because rather than grow beyond it, Sam's going to let it fester inside of him until it rots. I swear, the codependency this season is borderline sickening to me. But we are moving on right now. Sam is indignant that Dean thought this sounded like a case when they arrive in Kearney, and Dean explains his personal frustrations. Sam is just sulking. They're unable to find any leads on Kevin, and investigating this maybe case, maybe not a case, is better than spinning their wheels about it all. When they arrive, Garth is already on the scene, which is enough for any supernatural viewer to understand that we are supposed to know that there is definitely some sort of case here. Garth is happy to see them. He just hugs them both at the crime scene, makes Sam and Dean a little uncomfortable. Garth has a coat full of cell phones, and he takes a call from another hunter looking for advice on dealing with a revenant. And Dean asks what Garth is even doing. Sam asks if Garth is the new Bobby, and Dean is offended at the suggestion. Garth explains that someone had to take over Bobby's job since Sam and Dean were gone and Hunter still needed the help. And then he sets them all back on task, kind of temporarily defusing Dean's confusion and condescension. They don't find any EMF or sulfur or any of the usual evidence on the scene. Sam tries to use that as proof that this is not their kind of case. Garth explains it could have gone cold since the murder happened the night before, and other traces like sulfur could have been disturbed by people collecting the evidence from the scene. Sam is annoyed with Dean for agreeing with Garth, but then Garth finds something odd. Green ectoplasm that he wipes up with his finger and then tastes to confirm it is ectoplasm. So it must be some kind of ghost, even though ecto is usually black and not green. Another one of Garth's phones rings, and it's the coroner letting Garth know the victim had the word Alcott carved into his chest, probably by his wife's fingernails. So they go to interview the wife, chained to her hospital bed. She's distraught and can't remember anything about the attack, other than feeling uncontrollable rage. It didn't feel like herself. When they ask her if Alcott means anything to her, she's incredibly confused, but explains that her husband had taken Sarah Alcott to the prom while they'd temporarily split up, but that was more than 30 years ago. Just as they're beginning to think Sarah Alcott's ghost was getting revenge, they learn she's unfortunately not dead, so they figure they need to talk to her. But Dean's hungry, so they go out to eat and catch up. Garth asks where Dean's been for the last year, and he doesn't really want to talk about it, but Garth insists. So Dean tells him that he was in purgatory, and not the one in Miami, which was actually in Fort Lauderdale, but close enough, I guess. And yes, it was a LGBTQ club. And it went out of business several years before this episode aired. Dean really does not want to talk about purgatory either way, and changes the subject by asking about the unusual decor in the bar, as he describes it, hillbilly hankies. We learn that Garth knows a lot about Civil War era history. We'll later learn that he does Civil War reenactments once a year, every year, like it's his duty. And Missouri had been a border state, hence all the Confederate flags, and that it divided a lot of families. He learned all that because he went to college and then went on to dental school, until an unfortunate run-in with the Tooth Fairy led him into a life of hunting, and he really looks like he regrets ganking the Tooth Fairy. We cut to the victim's son, Scott, pulling up to a convenience store on the way to the hospital to see his mom. His wife calls, he answers, and explains to her that he's annoyed because some guy named Jeff is going into the store too, and Jeff is waving to get his attention. Scott takes a hit from his asthma inhaler and grabs a handful of change from his mother's purse on the seat next to him and grudgingly goes into the store. By the time Scott makes it inside, he's leaking green ectoplasm from his ear, so we all know he's being possessed. And rather than annoyed with Jeff, he now looks pissed. Scott pours himself some coffee, and Jeff comes over to say how sorry he is to hear about his family tragedy, offering any help he can give. But Scott just says he wants his money back and throws hot coffee all over Jeff, and then proceeds to beat him to death with a shovel. And then we see Scott reflected in the security mirror, overlaid with a Civil War-looking soldier ghost. When Sam and Dean arrive to examine the scene, they find the word Sussex written in blood on a beer cooler door. Interestingly, the beer behind it is Schultz, the beer of death and debt, right where a guy was killed because of an unpaid debt, apparently. We see what you did there, Mr. Wannick. Garth steps in another green ecto puddle, but tells us that just like his mother, Scott remembers very little about the attack other than feeling red-hot rage. All the while, Dean's studying Garth like something isn't quite right with him, because Garth is now wearing one of Bobby's old trucker hats, and it's driving Dean to distraction. While at least Sam is staying on target, asking if this might be some sort of family curse. Garth tells Dean that yes, it is Bobby's hat, fondly recalling a Rougarou case they'd worked together a while back when Bobby left it in his car, and Dean reaches up and grumpily whips the hat off Garth's head, saying that he's wearing it wrong, as if it was some sort of disrespect to Bobby's memory to wear it kinda crooked. The deputy interrupts to call them over to see the security footage, which is glitching out, and there's static over the perpetrator's face. Out of Leeds, Garth suggests they go talk to Sarah Alcott, which Sam volunteers for, leaving Dean and Garth to figure out what Sussex means. I think Sam just didn't want to deal with either grumpy-ass Dean or overly Bobby-fied Garth. Sarah Alcott fondly remembers her one night with Chester, but a week later he eloped with Mary and that was that. And Sarah herself had long ago moved on from that, gotten married herself to somebody else, but she didn't think that Mary ever really moved on. She was pretty understanding about it, and her guess was that to Mary, Sarah represented the reminder of her husband's single betrayal. Sarah seemed entirely well-adjusted and pleasant, though, and as Sam leaves her house, he has a flashback to his time with Amelia, as if betrayal had been the key takeaway from his conversation. As Amelia lay in bed with Sam, she tells him about her husband who enlisted in the military without even talking to her about it first, how he went off to Afghanistan and then supposedly died 8 months ago. Everything in her life had reminded her of him, so she took off and landed in that town where nobody knew her or could pity her for her loss. And then Sam hit a dog, and somehow that brought the two of them together. And of course, Sam has never told any of this to Dean. He's burying all of that just as hard or harder than Dean has buried anything that happened to him during that year in purgatory. Meanwhile, Dean's researching on the computer while Garth is paging through Bobby's journal. He reaches for a beer, and Dean stops him, reminding him that the last time he drank one beer, he was wasted, and then Garth calls Dean an idiot. And Dean once again has a full-body cringe on Bobby's behalf about it. He tells Garth that idiot's supposed to be used angrily, not happily. Garth just laughing about the beer thing. And that if Garth's gonna butcher it, he shouldn't say it at all. And then Garth asks if Dean's attitude has something to do with what's clearly not right between Dean and Sam. Garth offers his support to Dean for anything, and then starts to say that he knows that sometimes Bobby, you know, like Bobby had been his confidant. And Dean can't take it anymore. He tells Garth that he is not Bobby, and just to stop trying to be Bobby, because he's never going to be Bobby. Garth becomes a little emotional at this, like he's not willing to take any more of this abuse from Dean, and he deservedly takes Dean down a few pegs, and in the process, earns himself a lot of respect from Dean, too. He tells Dean, essentially, that Bobby belonged to all of them, and that Garth is just trying to take what he learned from Bobby to do something good with it. And Dean considers this, and then readjusts both his thinking on the matter and his tone towards Garth, and far more kindly tells Garth just to get back to the research. But something has subtly shifted here, and Bobby is about to save all of them, or at least info in his journal that Garth finds will. Dean learns that Sussex was a business venture between Scott and Jeff, and that Jeff had run the business into the ground. Scott was still angry about that loss, and then Sam calls to tell them about Sarah's prom night of passion with Chester, and they put together that something forced both of them to violently act on those feelings of betrayal. Garth discovers that specters leave behind green goo, a very particular type of ghost that's bent on vengeance, that rises after a grave has been vandalized. Unfortunately, the only grave in town that had been vandalized recently was the Confederate tomb of the unknown soldier. Awkward. They have to go back to the cemetery after dark to burn the bones. The graffiti and beer cans left in the tomb had all been cleared away, and the casket was resealed. So if the kids hadn't touched it, none of this specter nonsense would be happening now. Which feels like pointed commentary on letting the past stay buried in the past, you know? But Sam and Dean are still dredging through it and bringing those flashbacks to the surface again. Or at least Sam is. Dean's largely worked through his, and nearly everything about his missing year is out in the open now, barring the details about how Cass got left behind, but that's a tale for next week's episode. So back to the avenging Confederate soldier. Sam finds a loop of cord on the floor while Dean asks him to help get the casket open. The skeleton inside is in full Confederate uniform, with his sword and gun even still with him. And I think it's wild that a bunch of kids stole a penny off this body, but not any of the actual weapons that were probably quite valuable, like Garth said, and just, you know, souvenir weapons. They douse the body in salt and kerosene, and Garth asks if they should say a few words over the body before they set it on fire. So Dean offers a gloating, "We won," and then sets the bones on fire. And I have always appreciated that line. The next day at the police station, the sheriff drops a stack of paperwork on the deputy's desk and tells him to write up the report. Scott is in the holding cell, gasping and having an asthma attack, begging for his inhaler. The deputy goes to get it from evidence, dumps the contents of the envelope into his hand, but unfortunately the cursed penny is in there too, and green goo leaks from his ear. Poor Scott is not getting his inhaler anytime soon because the deputy goes on a rage mission to murder the sheriff because he's pissed about having to do all the paperwork. I cannot imagine how much paperwork this is going to generate, you know? Sam, Dean, and Garth show up to investigate because clearly the salt and burn did not solve their specter problem. Sam suggests that maybe an object was removed from the grave and the specter is attached to that. Dean thinks it could be like Bobby's flask. Now they just have to figure out what it is that's possessed. They go interview the poor deputy, who is baffled by his own actions, like horrified by himself. He remembers being tackled by another deputy who took his gun and then muttered something about going to the hospital. He thinks, "Oh no, I injured my other friend too. What the hell?" This time it's Dean who leaves to track down Carl, the deputy, at the hospital, leaving Sam and Dean to learn everything they could about that unknown soldier. When Carl gets to the hospital, he's armed with a shotgun, and we see the Confederate soldier in his reflection in the truck's mirror before he storms inside. At the local library, Garth also offers his support to Sam, if he ever wants to talk. Garth suggests Sam and Dean might be talking, but they don't seem to be listening to each other. And as Garth walks inside the library, Sam remains on the front steps, zoning out about Amelia again. The morning after their night together, Sam woke up to Amelia telling him to lock up when he leaves and to forget about everything she said to him the night before. She doesn't need his pity. She makes all sorts of assumptions about what Sam must think or feel for her, and honestly, she couldn't have been more wrong, you know? Because when people don't talk and just make assumptions about how someone else thinks or feels about them, they often completely miss the mark about all of it, which is something I wish Sam was carrying into reality here, because boy howdy, he is not applying this to any of his interactions with Dean lately. Garth has to come back outside and pull Sam out of his daydream as we see Dean arriving at the hospital. In the library, a very helpful librarian helps Garth and Sam narrow down their theories as to who the soldier may have been, while Carl starts shooting up the hospital. Green goo leaking out of his ear, he approaches a doctor, calls him Ump, and then apparently is pissed because the doctor had called him out when he'd stolen second base while playing a softball game. Fortunately for the doctor, Carl's gun jams and Dean has arrived. Dean grabs the gun and punches Carl, but it barely makes a dent on him, and then Carl knocks Dean down. The librarian shows Sam and Garth a photo of one of two local brothers, one who signed up with the Union Army and the other with the Confederate Army. Apparently, the Confederate soldier had been shot and killed by his own brother on the battlefield, and he swore vengeance against him with his dying breath. In the photo, the man had a penny on a string tied around his neck. Dean tries to talk to Carl to convince him to drop whatever the specter is attached to, but Carl just grins and tells Dean that there's unfinished business, thanks to Dean, and the specter likes the way Dean smells. He flings Dean over a desk, and then we cut back to the library. We learn that most soldiers were poor farmers whose families gave them pennies for luck, and in case they ever got lost, they'd have money for food or drink. And that's what had been tied to the cord that Sam found, so that connection back to their family, back to safety, security, having their needs met. That was taken from this soldier in his grave, and was the source of his vengeance against his own brother, who had supposed to have been the source of safety and comfort for him, you know? At the hospital, Carl forces the penny into Dean's hand. Sam tries to call Dean as they leave the library, but he gets no answer, probably because the Confederate soldier possessing him has no idea how phones work. Sam is still trying to call him when they get back to the motel, only to find Dean sitting on the bed, armed and waiting for him, with green goo dripping from his ear, pointing a gun at Sam, and coldly furious that Sam never bothered to look for him in purgatory. And I think it's interesting, the choice of a NASCAR-themed motel room here. Like, they just threw a bunch of stuff from the South at the wall until something stuck, and I have no idea why Missouri ties into NASCAR, but apparently it does. Anyway, we cut to a montage of the penny's journey, from the crypt up to the present moment, set to Soundgarden's Fell on Black Days, which is interestingly a song that has been used on the show before, way back in Season 2, Episode 5, Simon Said, after they returned to the roadhouse, distressed by everything that had happened with some of the other psychic children, and incidentally, where Dean had been mind-controlled by one of them, and almost mind-controlled by a second one of them to kill himself. Sam was particularly terrified that the exact same thing would happen to him, too, that he'd have his psychic powers turned against him. And here is that same song again as we watch a bunch of people who were seemingly unaffected by the penny before Mary Lou eventually received it as change from her transaction right before she went home and murdered her husband in a fit of specter-induced rage. Then her son found it in her purse, the deputy touched it in the evidence room, and then Carl picked it up and eventually put it into Dean's hand. And that's how we ended up right back here in this motel room. Sam tries to talk sense to Dean, telling him he knows Dean's not in control of himself. Garth starts to reach for his weapon and Dean stops him. But Dean gets a bunch of stuff off his chest, and Sam has all the reason in the world to not take any of it too much to heart, because Dean's just possessed, right? Dean accuses Sam of never wanting the life that they had, accuses Sam of blaming him for being pulled back into the life every time he has been pulled back. Garth tries to remind everyone that it's not actually Dean talking, but really, it is Dean talking. The specter is just turning his rage up to 11 and giving it an icy sheen, you know? These are all real things that have hurt Dean in the past, though. Sam lying to him, deceiving him, going all the way back to drinking demon blood and lying about it. Lying about working with Ruby, about having lost his soul, and then abandoning him for a whole year while Sam ran around with Samuel. Those weren't mistakes. They were choices that Sam made. Sam tries to calm him down, but says, "We both played a little fast and loose, and Sam, you are not helping this situation by not taking full responsibility for what Dean listed as entirely your own actions here. That is yet another choice you are making, Sam." And Dean admits that he may have lied to Sam sometimes, but he never once betrayed him and left him to die, especially not for some girl. Sam refuses to take this. He grabs the gun and starts hitting Dean, and I imagine this is exactly what the Penny wanted. Feuding brothers, taking out their anger on one another, venting their feelings of betrayal. When Dean flings Sam across the room, Garth steps between them, insisting that Dean won't hurt him because Garth is not the one that Dean has a grudge against. Dean orders Garth to move, but Garth refuses, appealing to Dean's lifetime of having taken care of Sam. He wouldn't really want to hurt his brother. Dean yells that Sam left him to rot in purgatory, and Garth works with this, saying Sam probably had his reasons, you know, I wasn't there. And Sam does not help the situation by angrily tossing out that Dean had his reasons for Benny, which completely confuses Garth because he's just now realizing there's a heck of a lot more to their ill feelings toward each other than he'd been led to believe. Hilariously, there is a fish mounted on the fishing net on the wall behind Garth here, like he's fishing for the right thing to say. And fish are also imagery that have long been tied to Cass, and hey, we're about to get a Cass mention here too. What Dean says next is interesting to me. He yells that Benny has been more of a brother to him over the last year than Sam has ever been. Cass let him down, Sam let him down, but Benny never let him down. And I need to pick this apart for a second, because Sam is just going to use it all as ammunition in his own personal piss pot. And I have no idea what that means, but it conveys the feeling I intended, so I'm leaving it in. Benny was a brother to Dean, an equal, supporting him and fighting by his side without complaint. Benny was upfront with him from the moment they met about who and what he was and what his intentions were. Dean was not required to be responsible for Benny or for his life and death the way that he had been for Sam since he was 4 years old. Dean is not Benny's parent or caretaker or supervisor the way that he is for Sam. So already it's an unfair comparison on Dean's part, you know? But it is how Dean feels, even if that feeling has been multiplied by orders of magnitude by the specter. And any feeling of love or care for Sam seems to have been completely buried under that rage. But also very interestingly, we get the honest comment that Cass let him down. Now, are we talking about when Cass walked out on him way back in season 6 and hoovered up purgatory? Or are we talking about when they were in purgatory? We know that Dean has forcibly overwritten his own memories of leaving, convincing himself that it must be his fault that Cass didn't get out. But we also know the truth of the matter, that Cass had no intention of leaving Purgatory, even with Dean, and that Dean felt that abandonment as another betrayal. The very deep, buried truth is coming to the surface here. And it's going to get reburied until after Cass forces it out of him next week. Garth pleads for Dean to take back control, not to hurt Sam. And when Dean tries to push past Garth to shoot Sam, Garth punches Dean. And I think it startles him so much that he drops the penny. Garth picks it up as Sam yells at him not to, but Garth clearly doesn't have a vengeful or betrayed bone in his entire body because he's completely unaffected by the specter. And just like that, the entire ordeal is done. Later that night, Garth has melted the penny and Dean asks why it didn't affect Garth. He gets why it didn't affect the kid who originally took it, being too young and innocent to bear anyone a real grudge. Garth just says he lets all that kind of stuff go. You can't change the past. Which is interesting, because it's a philosophy that Dean himself has espoused in the past, over Rufus's grave for one, that everyone he cares about has blanket forgiveness. No grudges go to the grave. He's admittedly carrying a lot of baggage about his lifetime with Sam, and season 8 just picks at it all like a bad scab. Garth advises Dean to stop being an idiot. With Bobby gone, Dean and Sam are all each other has now, and that's not a bad thing. And then he pulls Dean in for a hug. Dean puts Bobby's hat back on Garth's head, silently giving his blessing for Garth to carry on. I mean, he did use idiot correctly. And then as he walks away, he takes a call from another hunter to advise him on how to take down a Wendigo before his car refuses to start. In his frustration, Garth yells, "Balls!" just like Bobby used to, and Dean smiles because, yeah, Garth has it now. He's got it. And his car starts and he drives off. Back in the motel room, Sam's having yet another flashback to Amelia, where he goes back to her room later that night to explain himself to her. He doesn't pity her, and he explains how he lost his brother a few months back, and she lets him in to talk. So apparently their relationship actually begins in mutual pity, and then talking about their lost loved ones. It's really friggin' depressing, Sam. Back in the present, Sam finally gives Dean, quote, the girl's name, Amelia Richardson, and they live together in Kermit, Texas. Dean says he doesn't even remember what he said while he was possessed, exactly like the other victims of the specter had no memory of what they said and did while they were possessed. And yet Sam overrides that, denies that's possible, says Dean didn't need the penny to say any of the things that he said. And Sam, that's really not fair. Sam is angry now, insisting that he was upfront with Dean from the start about why he didn't look for him in purgatory, but that Dean was the one with secrets, like Benny. He gives Dean an ultimatum, move on or he will, as in stop tormenting Sam about having run away from hunting for a year. Sam is standing up for himself, and applause for that, really, but he's doing it in the bitchiest, pissiest possible way he could have. And somehow, this is supposed to make his complete abandonment of hunting, of Dean, and especially of Kevin, just wash away. Like somehow it's now all Dean's fault. And Dean just accepts it. But Sam just cannot shut up when he's ahead. He tells Dean that he might be the hunter that runs into Benny one day and ices him. And Dean just accepts that too. But for Sam, it feels like he's looking to get some revenge on Dean. And it's not a good look on him. But that is where this episode ends. And unfortunately, Sam did not receive the message that Garth was trying to share with them both this episode. But this particular bit of feuding is going to go on back burner for a few weeks because we're about to stumble across a mysteriously reappeared Castiel, fresh or not so fresh from Purgatory, and finally get a real lead on Kevin in Season 8, Episode 7, A Little Slice of Kevin. And I could keep talking about this episode, but honestly, it's just going to make me mad at Sam. So I think I'll end this one right here. And until next time, you can find me on Tumblr at MittensMorgul or at SPNGeorge. You can find me on Discord and Blue Sky as MittensMorgul. Or you can email me at MittensMorgul@gmail.com. And I look forward to talking to everybody again real soon. And unfortunately, I cannot stop talking about Sam quite just yet. Because, man, he is really got the blinkers on about his own behaviors here. He directly contradicts things he said to Amelia to appeal to her in his flashback scenes, and those are lessons that he should have applied to his own self. He's not seeing the plank in his own eye before he's trying to pull the sliver out of Dean's, And oh my God, sorry for the biblical references, but I mean, this is a kind of a biblical situation, I guess. Anyway, he is not going to let Benny go. There is some weird jealousy here. Like, he feels like he's insufficient to meet all of Dean's personal needs, as if Dean shouldn't need anyone else but his responsibility to Sam to keep him going. And it's like, Sam, the fuck were you? Fucked off with some chick in a hallucination for a year. Okay, whatever. I mean, at least your dog was cute. Whatever. Anyway, Sam is just really not in touch with reality here. And it's not going to get much better, and it's going to drive him into all the choices he makes leading him to the end of the season, where he's willing to lay down his own life because he regrets how he acted here so badly. So, you know, he's reacting like a teenager now, lashing out at Dean, but oh boy, he's going to come to regret all that later. Anyway, Sam and his little piss pot ways. Anyway. Have a good one, everyone.